I want to welcome everybody. Bienvenue. Bienvenue au Québec. Welcome to Canada. Bienvenue au Canada. My name is Lawrence Murphy, and together with my colleague Paul Parnasse, the two of us are doing the first presentation, and then François Lefort. François Lefort is going to do the second presentation. Est-ce qu'il y a quelqu'un ici qui comprend pas l'anglais? Okay, is there anybody here who does not understand French? Okay, il y a quelques personnes. I'm the chair, so I'm responsible for tracking the time and making sure that the questions end on time. Needless to say, with all that power, we're going to take the whole time, and François will get maybe 30 seconds at the end. I'm sure he'll do well. We do have to get out right on time because the bus. Is anybody taking the bus to the métro? Okay, so we need to get out right on time for you folks. So if I interrupt somebody and say, I'm sorry, we got to stop because we have to move on, that's why. Okay, so my name's Lawrence Murphy. I'm one of the principals with Therapy Online. That's my colleague, Paul Parnasse.
My background is in social work, and I have my own practice. I do online counseling and telephone counseling, and I work with Lawrence. I'm an instructor in a cyber counseling program that Therapy Online provides in conjunction with the Faculty of Social Work at the U of T.
So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Therapy Online briefly, what Therapy Online is, who we are. We're going to talk about the presence techniques, and for that I'm going to hand the microphone, the mantle, over to Paul, and he's going to discuss those techniques. And then come back to me. I'm going to finish off by talking about some recent research that we've done using the presence techniques. And one thing just to be aware of is that this is going to go fast. The whirlwinds knock you off your feet. This is a real condensation, just snippets of material that we teach over the course of 12 to 24 weeks. There you go. Okay, so a little bit about Therapy Online. So myself, Lawrence, and my colleague Dan Mitchell, the two of us, we actually founded the company in 1994. We took it on the internet in 1995. So when John was talking about some of those early folks, we're a couple of them. One feather in our cap, back in 1998, the National Board for Certified Counselors had decided that online counseling was coming, no matter what. So they started looking around the internet to find somebody to collaborate with to write an ethical code. And so we worked with them to author what has ended up being the first ethical code for online practice. My colleague Dan Mitchell and I were trained as research practitioners, which means that we always keep a foot in the academic realm. So in 1998, we published a work called When Writing Helps to Heal, Email as Therapy. It's been cited about 70 times, so we consider it a seminal work. Most recently, coming out this summer in the British Journal of Social Work, is a piece that compares face-to-face and online work. That's the research I'm going to talk about. Paul and I were the principal researchers and authors of that manuscript, and we worked in collaboration with Interlock PPC Worldwide. Interlock is a Canadian employee assistance firm, and so we use their clients, and I'll say a little bit more about that. Two other quick things about us. We have a system that has encrypted email, and it's a client management system database. It does all the things that one does in a regular face-to-face practice, and we license that. And then finally, we provide certificate cyber counseling training. We do this in collaboration with the University of Toronto. So this is what I'm talking about these 12-week trainings. There's one going on right now, and my students don't know that I'm... Well, actually, they know that I'm here, but it won't appear to them that I'm here because I'm going to send out the next lecture this evening for the third session of the second module. One thing that's not here because the presentation, for whatever reason, wasn't on this laptop is that slide that declares my conflicts of interest. So you can see that I have... conflicts of interest. I'm the principal in this company that did the research, so I disclose that to you so you can, you know, be nice to me, but you're more than entitled to take things with a grain of salt. Okay, so I just want to talk about the challenges here. The first one is this idea of personalized care. So yes, it's great that we can reduce overhead. Yes, there's a great business case for doing this kind of work, but if it doesn't feel personal, if the clients don't experience it as personal, then it's not going to work. And so if we want them to stop coming to the emergency ward with their chronic problems, we want them to stay at home and manage them there, but we don't provide them with something personal, it's not going to work. They're just going to reappear. So that's one challenge. Another one is avoiding misunderstandings in a text-based environment. We do text-based therapy. We call it therapy email. Get it? Therapy email, haha. Anyway, so we do text-based work. Jeffrey Barnett used the word nice. The reality is that any phrase in English ou en français can be changed. Its meaning can be changed with a change in tone of voice. So the one I like to use, I'll use Paul, is nice shoes. So I say to Paul, hey, Paul, nice shoes.
Thank you.
Hey, Paul, nice shoes. Hey, Paul, nice shoes. Meaning changes. Même chose en français, oui. Another thing is connecting without alienating. Yes, clients are at a distance, and that's one of the beauties of this kind of a service, but we don't want them to experience being distant from us. In fact, I would put it that we want to connect and enhance the therapeutic alliance. And so one of the things that Paul's going to be talking about in context of these techniques that we've developed and worked on over the last 15 years is enhancing the therapeutic alliance. And finally, it's not enough that it's just good. We want to increase satisfaction. We want clients and patients to be more satisfied. We don't want them to have to wait, but we also don't want to increase the workload of clinicians. So that's a bunch of what we're about. Now, one of the questions that comes up is, well, you're going to do this work. And this is pretty visionary. It's pretty out there. So this is the way I like to set this up before I pass it on to Paul. There are certain groups we know that are less likely to use the internet for these kinds of services. And my grandmother fits into that group. And my grandmother is shocked and amazed by what the internet can do. She's astonished. But she would be equally astonished by the internet as by the idea that you cannot create, nurture, deepen relationship in text. Because my grandmother had nothing but text for the duration of the Second World War. All she and my grandfather had was text in order to share their hopes, their joys, their fears, their anxiety, and their worries, to deepen their love and to stay connected. So, the idea that we can do counseling in a text-based medium at a distance it's Star Trek, admittedly, and it is a very, very old idea. The idea that we can connect, maintain, and deepen relationship in text. So what I want to do now, I'm going to pass it over to Paul, because this is my grandmother and her already husband. What we're talking about now is we're talking about doing therapy and connecting with clients and creating that therapeutic alliance. So
picking up on what Lawrence has said, one of the challenges is, how do you do this online? How do you form a relationship? How do you begin to engage with a client? How do you gain their trust when you can't see them, when you can't hear them? I would bet that most of us, all of us in this room, who are counselors or therapists, when we were first trained, we were trained in assessments, in the verbal, the nonverbal. We would look for body language, all of those aspects, the visual, the audio, the words were all important. How suddenly do you begin to form a relationship, an effective therapeutic relationship with a client, when they can't see you, they can't hear you, and neither can you see or hear them? Well, the idea behind the presence techniques is to compensate for the fact that there isn't the audio, there isn't the visual, there aren't those nonverbal cues. What we have are a series of techniques, and I must highlight what Lauren said earlier, that what we're going to show you today is really just a snippet. It's a small piece of some examples that we use in the work that we do, that when I write to a client, I spend an hour of my time creating my exchange using these techniques. So again, you're going to see just a little bit of what we have here. So one of the first techniques that I'd like to share with you is what we call emotional bracketing. Now, my guess is that some of you already use this when you write emails to friends or colleagues. You know, we sometimes want to separate out certain comments, statements that we're making in an email by making it appear more important than other pieces of information that we're sharing. So the idea would be to create brackets, simply put in brackets certain thoughts, maybe even certain emotions, certain feelings that I'm experiencing as I'm writing to my client. It's a way of establishing a connection. It's a way of establishing my presence. And we're going to show you an example in the next moment. Jane, I am sorry to hear about your situation. I mean that. I sense in your words shock, anger, fear, and lots of pain. It seems your world has been turned upside down. Speaking gently and wanting to reach out to you in a show of support, perhaps you have survived other difficult times, looking at you compassionately. And if so, try to recall what helped you get through those difficult times. Sometimes our greatest strengths are our own inner resources. Now, when I wrote that piece to my client, I was sitting in front of my computer. I was thinking about what she had said. I was trying to get to the core message, the themes, the ideas behind the email. I knew that she was in a lot of shock and she was in a very difficult space. And I wanted to let her know that I understood. And so I actually, as I write, I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, I'm feeling, I'm trying to get a sense of what's going on, and I may be moving my hands, and that's what I'm doing in front of my computer. And so the idea here is to convey that, to find a way to share that presence with the client.
The next one's an example of a situation where we're dealing with an addict, somebody with an addiction. We want to confront the fact that they haven't connected with us, but anybody who's worked with addicts knows that when you confront them, it often pushes them away. So we need to be able to do that, but temper it. So we'll put this one up, we'll let you read it, and we'll move on. Of course, questions at the end.
Okay, so another technique that we believe in using is what we call descriptive immediacy, descriptive imagery. Basically, what we're talking about is trying another way to engage the client, to connect with them by describing perhaps aspects of our own environment where the counseling is occurring. So we might try to help them imagine that if we were in fact meeting together, they might actually experience some of what is happening in the counseling environment. And to show you the next example, to give you an idea of how this might occur. When you were done, I sat back and smiled and thought, he knows what to do, and I really think you do. Again, it's a way of ascribing certain thoughts, certain ideas that we have that we want to express in a sentence by adding to that sentence. And we're going to show you in a moment a couple more techniques that can highlight, accentuate certain pieces of the message that we want to convey to the client in our response.
So this next one is about setting the scene and about establishing the look of the office. And the neat thing that happens with clients is that they will often start doing this too, sharing with you what their place is like, what the mood or the sounds are like, where they're living, the noise on the main street at 2 in the morning, which is keeping them awake, stuff you might even not learn face-to-face. This is our part.
Dear Joe, if you were here with me in my office, I would shake your hand and welcome. I'm smiling warmly as I offer you a choice of any of the comfortable chairs in this room. I'm glad you've made the decision to speak with me. When I start with a new client, I need to find a way to begin to connect, to begin to let them know that I'm here, I'm available to them, and I want them to begin to get a sense of what I'm like. What am I like as a therapist? So the words that I use, the way that I write, some of the descriptions that I might ascribe to even where I am physically, can sometimes give them an idea, yeah, you know what? I can almost picture that. I can picture sitting in that chair with that therapist. Of course, I'm not doing that right now, but, you know, he's getting through. Time presence. You know, when we do our exchanges, and they're done asynchronously, so there could be a lapse in time between when I send my exchange to a client and when he or she writes back to me. Sometimes we will encourage the client to write their email over a period of time. So they might start sending, thinking, and beginning to compose their email, and then perhaps take a break. It might be too emotionally difficult. for them to continue in that moment. And I'll say to them, it's okay to take a break. Save what you've written, go back a few hours later, go back the next day if you need to. You can compose your email to me over time. And as they do that, they're reflecting, they're thinking, they're actually giving a lot of thought to what's going on. And so there is a sense of time occurring in different stages. And so in the response that I write back to them, I might say to them, you know, you remember when you wrote to me last week about this, that, or whatever, or I can really sense in this piece of what you're telling me right now that there's a change, there's a difference. And I sense that, and this is why. Time becomes different when you're writing in an asynchronous exchange.
Other techniques?
Some other techniques. I'm sure, again, when you're writing an email, you may already use some of these techniques. How we use the keyboard, how we space out letters, maybe highlight certain letters, capitalize, use italics, underline. There's a way that we can separate out certain comments to really enhance the message that we want to give across to our client. For example, amazing versus amazing. Slow down. Now we could write, okay, so let's stop and think, or okay, so let's stop and think. Well, John, my hunch is that you've really stretched yourself in taking on these responsibilities. Congratulations. Now again, when I write this, I'm thinking, what do I want to convey to my client? How can I help support him? How can I find a way to help him see his strengths, enhance his own abilities? I need to look for ways and examples, and I want to convey it in writing because I'm not there to say it. I've had clients tell me, they write back and say, Paul, it felt like you were in the room with me. It's amazing. I don't know how you do it. So again, after time with practice, and if you can imagine a series of an exchange, right? This is a small example, and it might seem, I don't know how this could really, you know, make a difference. But if you can envision a full email that I or any counselor has spent an hour thinking about, working on, and you begin to put in these techniques, wow, the effect can be quite powerful.
Okay, so pretty interesting. I have a little bit of a whirlwind, realize that. Of course, the question is, so sounds pretty neat, looks like you did a lot of work. Does it work? Does it make an impact? So this recent piece of research that we did, we compared a group of about 102 face-to-face clients who had come through Interlock, the employee assistance firm, and they had received face-to-face counseling from one group of counselors, and a group of therapists who work for Therapy Online, our affiliates, including Paul, worked with 45 online clients. And we used statistical measures so that we could compare two groups of different sizes. And we looked at them in terms of GAF scores. So the Global Assessment of Functioning is a standard measure. It's often used. It's actually recommended by the Employee Assistance Society of North America. And it involves assigning a score at the beginning and the end of therapy and looking at the change. So we wanted to look at, is there any difference in the amount of change in these two groups, and is there any difference in the ultimate scores that the two groups received? And then finally, there's a client satisfaction survey that Interlock uses. It's one of those surveys that agencies use. It's not standardized for reliability and validity, so of course those are the kinds of things that are in the manuscript at the end. But that said, it looks at the kinds of things that we can think of, and here are some examples of the kinds of questions. Kinds of things that focus on issues around therapeutic alliance. Was the counselor able to help me plan? Did I get a sense of, was I comfortable enough to be able to share with them to work through my issues and problems? And so the same client satisfaction survey is filled out by the online clients and the face-to-face clients, and then we compare the two groups. So this is essentially what we found. Although we did see differences in the initial GAF score, slight differences, but statistically significant ones, there was no difference in the amount of change or in the final scores. So each of them was significant, Neither was insignificant in terms of actual change. Both were significant. Both were comparable. There was no statistically significant difference in the outcomes or in the gap scores. And also in terms of the client satisfaction survey, in terms of the degree to which clients said they felt connected, they felt understood, the goals were established, the goals were met, those kinds of things. So the bottom line, and this actually goes along with much of the research that exists today, a lot of the work that's being done, some by Isaac Brack, who will be here on Saturday, and we all need to stay till the end on Saturday so we can see him. I don't want to force him to be here without anybody around, right? What we found is that these two groups, at the end, the outcomes were equivalent in terms of the development of relationship, in terms of the outcomes on the GAF score, suggesting that the online work is the equivalent of the face-to-face work. So, that's the presentation. We're in under time. We have 5 minutes for questions. Please.
Do you only work with email, or do you ever do instant messaging, MSN? It's really interactive.
We only work with email. One of the reasons that we don't do streaming, like whether it's video or text, one reason is because sometimes lines fail, and I have some really unfortunate stories about those kinds of things happening. A colleague of mine who was working with an Aboriginal woman on reserve, and they were discussing the kind of things that an Aboriginal woman on reserve would be discussing about her life, and the line went. So those kinds of things do happen. The other thing is that what we're trying to do here is we're trying to create that sacred space, yes, that sacred therapeutic space. In our experience, the text messaging doesn't create that to the degree that we're able to here. I also find in text, although it's a great way of exchanging information, there are some difficulties in terms of I start asking a question, the person begins to answer it, I think they're done, I ask a second question, they give me the second half of their answer, I think it's an answer to the second, so on and so forth. Not that it shouldn't be done, but there are complexities, and this is what we've been focused on. Yes? Merci. Good question. So the ages were slightly different. The average age was about 45 in the face-to-face, about 43 in the online, wasn't statistically significant. A few more men online than women, wasn't significant. And the problems were generally the same. It's an employee assistance, so these people have work, yes. These people have jobs, and by and large, their lives are together. So the typical problems are relationship problems, affairs, parenting, some depression and anxiety, these kinds of some workplace issues, difficulties with boss, same kinds of issues. Good question.
Who is rating the pre and post GAF? Who actually does the score?
Yeah. So the way that GAF scores are done is the counselor themselves actually assigns the score pre and post. So the counselor themselves is responsible for assigning the score. And there's certainly stuff in the literature, there's material in the literature suggesting that it's not the best way of doing things and there are better ways. But it's the way that Interlock does it, and so it's what we had access to. No, the system that we use is web-based. It's secure. It's encrypted. So there's virtually no access. And even if somebody could get access, they wouldn't be able to read anything. It wouldn't say "Dear Lawrence." It says *AB927832. So in terms of that sort of confidentiality, there's no issue. Many of the issues that Jeffrey brought up today at the plenary, which are really really important issues. I know how this sounds, but we have very little time. We figured all those things out.
What I would add is that this is an encrypted email program that we use in this service, so the clients have to create an account, set up a username, a password, two passwords actually, to get in. It's quite protected. The one other piece I would add about EAP is we tell our clients, First of all, don't email from work, because work computers are belonging to your employer. Employer or administrator, IT administrator, can go on and find out who's using it. So we're very careful in the beginning in terms of explaining to clients where and when. You know, try to do this on your own time, at home. Be sure that you shut down your computer, you get off it, because even if you're using an encrypted program, but your teenage son comes down because you've gone to get a cup of coffee and say, "Oh, Mom, Mom's having an affair." I mean, so we think about all of these aspects of confidentiality and share that with the client up front so that they know.
Other questions? We didn't. Dropout rates tend to be pretty low in these services. But no, we didn't compare dropout rates. Yeah, it's a good question. There's another publication. Thank you.
What kind of therapy?
Right. Yeah. So in the text-based work, there are people who work from a narrative framework. There are people who have solution-focused, although pretty much everybody's eclectic. We have people who work from a sort of cognitive behavioral approach. There's some insight-oriented work that's done, and you know, it's not uncommon for people to ask questions that require the client to develop some insight into their work, into their lives. The one thing that if you are married to the idea that change in counseling happens as a consequence of transference and working through the transference, the text-based work is not for you. There's too much of a time lag, and although it's extraordinarily powerful in terms of helping people deal with problems in their lives, difficulties and challenges, once there are difficulties in the relationship between the two individuals, because you can't be in the room with the person and you say something that you think is nice and they go, you don't have the opportunity in that moment to say, "Can we just stop here? Something happened there." You can't do that. And so disruptions in the relationship become complicated. The few times that I have phoned clients, and it's rare, is because of that. So if you're married to the idea that transference is the cause of change in therapy, the text-based work really is inappropriate.
What are the clients' comments about their experience?
Oh, what happened here?
And
oh, God, this is the wrong thing.
Some of the feedback comes back either in the direct exchange, where clients have actually said, as I said earlier, you know, it feels like you're there in the room with me. You really do understand. You found a way to connect. I mean, it appears in the emails. The satisfaction surveys, as Lawrence was saying, ask some specific questions, and they rate it. And generally, the feedback has been quite positive, quite favorable.
Can I ask a pragmatic question about billing? How do you go about billing?
No, we got to stop. I'm sorry to interrupt. We'll talk to you afterwards. People got to get out of here on the bus, and we're right there. So when we finally got this,
it's a good question. We can answer it though.
Yeah.
Offline.
We have good answers, but we'll answer you offline. Okay.